Corey Curtis sitting in for Jared Stillman on Jared and the GM on this Friday afternoon. What time is it? 3 o'clock in Nashville, Tennessee. I've got 3 hours to go with the living legend, Floyd Reese. I got lucky. The only other person luckier than me today is Sally, who Floyd goes home to every night. She's still there. That's the amazing thing.
47 years, 48
wow.
years.
When's your anniversary?
April 3rd.
April 3rd.
Yes, sir.
A couple more to 50 there.
Scary, huh?
Yeah. And you still look like you're like 19.
Yeah, 20. I look like I've been looking like I've been 80 since I was 12.
Yeah.
So I'm okay.
All right. This is Jared and the GM on ESPN's 102.5 The Game. We got a new Hall of Fame class getting ready to go in early August, and it is an utterly fantastic one. Champ Bailey, Pat Bowlen, Gil Brandt, Tony Gonzalez, Ed Reed, Johnny Robinson. And then there's a guy who donned the two-tone blue for a while named Kevin Mawai, who is as fine of an interior offensive lineman as you will have ever seen. He joins us on the phone right now. Kevin, it is great to have you back in the Music City. How are you?
Yep. Oh, hello?
Hey, Kevin, you got us now?
Yeah, man. Right. I'm in the middle of, like, 5 feet from where I'm standing, I lose a seat, and I'm 2 feet closer, and then here it goes again, but I'm good.
All right, well, we'll try to hang with you the best we can. Congratulations on the Hall of Fame. I was just talking with Floyd Reese about your class. Going to the Hall is awesome no matter what, but when you see the group of guys you're going in with, that's got to make it even more exciting, doesn't it?
Oh, it really is. I mean, it's a great class, and then to have three of our classmates be a first-time inductees, that just tells you the talent of the guys that are going in with me. And then, you know, special for me as well for the LSU Tiger family, Johnny Robinson coming in as the old-timer, to have two LSU Tigers go in. It's a really neat class, and I'm proud to be a part of those guys.
You know, I always say it's the Hall of Fame. It's not the Hall of Very Good. No, because there are a lot of very good players in the NFL who don't get to the Hall of Fame. What does this say to you about how elite of a player that you were? How defining is this?
You know, it defines your entire career. It really does. I think guys that play the game at the level that I did or as long as I did, you kind of have an idea of what you did and what you accomplished. But to have other people recognize you as one of the best ever, I mean, that's it's the total pinnacle of professional sports and professional football. And it's just such an honor and privilege to be named amongst the greats and to have, an opportunity to go in with the guys I'm going with. But, I mean, there's only 336 or 326 gold jackets or, Hall of Famers. And to be number 324, it's special. And I get to share that honor with guys I played for and guys that I played with. And so I'm looking forward to it, man. I really am.
Kevin, when you played, one of the things you could do better maybe than anybody I've ever seen was you were so athletic. You could pull, you could run, you could get to the second level. You were good in space. Where did all that come from? Were you just a great natural athlete to begin with?
I'm sure DNA has a lot to do with it. But I just, I was always taught at an early age when I was playing ball, it's like you play 100 miles an hour, you play the whistle. And, I think really playing different sports growing up helps the athleticism and not being a single sport kid. And that definitely helps. But I think the more you love a sport or a game, the more you're willing to go out and do other things and to enhance your abilities. But I did. I excelled at the second level, and I excelled in the open field, and that's where I made a name for myself. And it's really humbling to see that there are coaches teaching stuff or trying to teach things that I did, but not everybody can do it. And so when a coach like Jim McNally, a legendary offensive line coach, says, "Well, he teaches a clinic," and says, "Well, this is how Kevin Mawai did things," and that just kind of you set the bar, and so the guys try to emulate you and. And that makes you feel like you are one of the best.
Do you how far along are you on your setup for the Hall of Fame as far as family and events and getting people where you need them and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, well, I think invites just started going in this week, and so I'm getting text messages from teammates and friends and stuff that are starting to get them, and of course they all have questions, and you know, that was the hardest part, just gathering, you know, all the contact information for coaches and teammates, and you know, for my entire career and going all the way back to high school and that kind of thing. And you know, I guess everybody does an induction party, and I don't even care about that. I'll have my wife take care of that kind of stuff. So, but I, you know, and the last thing, you know, the biggest part for me right now is trying to put a speech together, and I've kind of started it a little bit, and we'll probably end up getting some help with it, just to kind of get my thoughts in order, rambling away, and be concise. And you know, I don't want to put anybody to sleep, but I don't want to stay up there for 45 minutes either. And so I'll try to make it short and sweet to the point, and hopefully be a memorable one.
Who will be introducing you?
That's Tracy, my wife. I've been with her. Next week will be 26 years of marriage, and we've been together for 29 years. And she's been with me for, you know, every NFL game, and my best critic and my best fan. And so it wasn't even a hesitation. I knew well before me getting selected that she would be my presenter.
I always feel like I enjoy the presenter. Because feel like we learn a lot about you guys by who you pick and where your relationships are. I mean, I'm from Chicago. I'll never forget Walter's son, Jarrett, being his presenter at the Hall of Fame. I think it's fantastic that your wife is presenting you. Do you have to prepare yourself for this? Or is there any risk of you falling apart up there? Because if it were me, I'd be a puddling, dribbled mess.
I'm going to say, don't put money on me not falling apart. I cried when Mr. Baker knocked on my door. I cried when I sit there and think about it. Yeah. I was driving down the road.
I don't blame you.
And then you just have this thought like, oh, my gosh, I'm a Hall of Famer. And then you get choked up. And then for a bit, that's my nature. I'm emotional, and I'm a crybaby. And you know, you always see every year, you know, guys get up there, so I'm not going to do it. I'll hold off. And they look at all the old-timers and the guys that made it before them, and it's almost like as if you're being dared not to cry. But you know what? If there's something involved, a fine involved in that, just go ahead and take the money. I'll cry when I step up on that stage, and there's no doubt about that.
When you look at your career milestones, how important to you was that 2,000-yard season with Chris Johnson?
You know, that was huge because not too many guys have rushed for 2,000 yards. And to have that, I think the most special thing about that was it was my last season. And a first-team Pro Bowler and a first-team All-Pro that year. At that age, that meant more to me because of those other things. I think the more significant things that meant more to me is the number of games I played, you know, 241 games, and you know, my teammates could count on me. And for me, that's more important than the single-yard rushing. But to have that with Chris and the group of offensive linemen that we had, that was special and unique and kind of neat because I was talking to Michael Ruse last night. And he's like, hey, I'm going to make sure all of our 2005, you know, 2006 rushing guys are going to be there, including Algie and Chris and, you know, the five guys on the old line. So it's going to be a reunion of sorts, and I'm looking forward to it.
When you were with the Titans, you were playing with Bruce, and I think most of us figured he was going to be a Hall of Famer. And Munch was coaching you, right?
Yeah, well, Bruce had already retired, so before I got there.
Oh, okay.
But I did play Bruce in a couple of Pro Bowls, and so when Bruce left, and then it was the year I got there was the year after Brad Hopkins retired. So, okay. But I did play for Munchak, and you know, that was special in that he was a Hall of Famer. He is a Hall of Famer, and so to sit in that room for 4 years, and you know, every year he would leave for 3 or 4 days on training camp to go to the Hall for the induction ceremony. He'd come back and share those stories, and I remember, you know, when Bruce got in, and you know, Munchak was his presenter, and vice versa. And so that's unique in that I got to, you know, play with one with Bruce a couple times in the Pro Bowl and then be coached by another one, and those two guys be such good friends. It gave me an even greater respect for the position I'm in now.
Did you think then that, hey, you know, give me 6-7 years, I'll be right there with you boys?
You know, I never thought about it. And part of it, and I credit Munchak for it, you know, because he'd come back. He's like, look, if you're in the discussion, you don't need to talk about it. Just, you know, just go about it. But if you're going to be in the discussion, then you don't have to think about it and talk about it. And I tried not to, and it was hard each year when your name came up. But I knew probably by my 12th or 13th year in the league that my name could be in the discussion. And I knew at the time Damani was being talked about. Dwight Stevenson had just gotten in. And so those were the guys that set the benchmark prior to me getting there. And once I retired, I think right around that time is when Damani got in. And when he got in, I was like, yeah, I got a chance now. Because if he didn't get in, I never got in. I actually thanked him for getting in when he did.
There's still a bunch of great players who haven't gotten that knock on the door or that phone call. Are there one or two guys that you would like to see in particular joining you in Canton one day right now that aren't there?
You know, I was asked the same question right after the election, and we found out. And the one guy that sticks out to me is Zach Thomas. And I had to go and just taking him for who he was. But if you look at his numbers and what he did, he's definitely worthy of it. And you know, if I get the opportunity to push him on that ballot, then there's no doubt that he's a guy that I think should be there.
Corey Curtis and Floyd Reese on the phone with Titans legend and future NFL Hall of Famer, or do we call him Hall of Famer right now, Kevin Mawai. you know, congratulations. I got one big question for you, Kevin. How do we get you back in Nashville to be in that offensive line room coaching with the Tennessee Titans?
Well, somebody got to hire me first. You know, I'm working my way up. I'm on staff at Arizona State with Herm Edwards, I'm quality control analyst and assistant line coach. And you know, I understand that, you know, guys got to work their way up and pay their dues. But, you know, coaching, whether it's the NFL or college, it's a relationship business as well. And, you know, if your head coach or the coordinator are comfortable with you, that's not going to happen.
Now,
you know, I'm where I'm supposed to be right now. And who knows, you know, guys got a plan down the road. And it might lead me to Tennessee. It might not. You never know.
Are you comfortable, or is your goal to be a positional coach and work with guys one-on-one? Or do you want to be a head coach one day?
You know, I want to be an offensive line coach. I want to be talked in the breath, like Howard Mudd and Jim Galley and Mike Munchak, guys like that.
That's a big goal.
To say that I never want to be a head coach, I would never say that. You just don't ever know. I mean, I didn't want to be the president of the PA. Yeah, you still don't ever know. But right now, I just want to be the best old line coach I can be and make a name for myself there. Whatever happens, happens.
Well, you have to be happy at Arizona State. I know that, there's a lot of people there that were good friends, and Herm is one of the best, and I'm sure you're doing a great job. So,
well, I appreciate that, Floyd. And, yeah, I hope I am. I haven't got fired yet. So. But, you know, they said, well, I'm learning in this coaching profession. It's not a matter of if you're going to get fired. It's just a matter of when. And so right now we're doing well. We had a decent year last year with Herm, and, you know, we got a good class coming in, and, you know, we're trying to, you know, we're on the road, all the coaches are on the road right now trying to build this next recruiting class, and that's where you find out that's where you win games, get the right kind of players in. But I'm in a good situation. My daughter just finished her freshman year on campus at ASU. She's a swimmer, and so, you know, right now I'm where I need to be. Like I said, I'm open to anything down the road.
All right. Well, Kevin Mawai, congratulations. We really appreciate the time. Great talking with you, and can't wait to watch you try to hold it together up there in Canton in a couple of months.
Sounds great, man. August 3rd, make sure you guys tune in.
All right. Kevin
Congratulations, Mawai. Kevin. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, boy. I appreciate you, man. Thank
My
you.
My pleasure.
All right. When we return on Jared and the GM, we're going to talk a little bit about the Titans' offensive line, and is there a drastic move that should be made? We'll debate that next. You're listening to Nashville's Best Sports Talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game. This is Jared and the GM. Happy Friday, everybody. Corey Curtis sitting in for Jared Stillman on ESPN Radio 102.5 The Game. Floyd Reese still in the house. We just got done talking to Kevin Mawai. And, you know, there are days that you're luckier in this business than others. And when you have conversations like that, that's a pretty good day.
Oh, yeah. Kevin was such a delight when we brought him in. And I told you the story before. I mean, Kevin played angry. Kevin had Kevin was a little bit nasty, and so
a little bit.
So you were worried a little bit about what about in the locker room, what about off and off the field. He was say, you hear people say, "Well, when you get on the field, you flip the switch." That's what Kevin could do. You know, Kevin was the world's nicest person when he was off the field, and then when he put the helmet on, the switch flipped, and he was gone.
So many guys, I mean, like that, just that I think of here, Eddie George, Kevin Carter.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, just great guys. Yeah. And then get on the field, and it is absolutely go time. Now, Kevin Mawai was never a question for the Titans at center. He was a plug-and-play guy. You know, when the Titans traded up to get Jack Conklin, and then he was an all-pro as a rookie, that's what they thought they had. Well, here we go, headed into year four. The Titans have declined his fifth-year option.
Right.
And listen, everybody makes way more of that than I think that they need to, because people have to understand the dollar figure that is tagged on to that. It is a massive number. I think, and I'm sure the players have negotiated this, but I think it's a detriment to a lot of the players that offensive linemen are all grouped in one category.
Right.
Because left tackles make what left tackles make, guards make what guards make, and centers make what centers make. Why all those guys are lumped together on the top 10 salaries is ridiculous. I mean, it's like when Chance Warmack was the right guard of the Titans. There was no chance his was getting picked up because he was getting paid the same price as the best tackles in the game.
And that's it. You'd have to be the best guard, you'd have to be Bruce Matthews warrant that kind of money.
So, I mean, and being a top 10 pick especially, now it's top 10 salaries. When you're not a top 10 pick, that number drops. I think if he was outside the top 10, that number would have dropped by over $2 million. And like if Jack Conklin's the 13th pick of the draft, you know what? The Titans might have picked up his option.
Sure.
His fifth-year option. But and also, just because you pick up a guy's option doesn't mean you have to. It's not guaranteed until the first day of the league year, the next league year. So you can still get out of it, even if you pick it up. A lot of people are wondering, because some people had Jack projected as a guard coming into the NFL, and I think there are some people who feel like he should be a guard for the Tennessee Titans. I know two people who don't think he should be a guard. Do you think he should be a guard?
You know, we have talked about this a little bit in the past. I mean, to me, it's all based on his injury. And I don't know. You fully expect him to come off of the injury okay. You know, with big guys, they to have a year is maybe not enough. They need a little bit more than a year. And Jack had that.
Well, he had the ACL in the Patriots game, and got rushed back.
Yeah.
And my understanding is he had a cracked kneecap to end last season.
Which is that what it was?
That's my understanding.
Okay.
And that's not a terrible injury.
Yeah, especially if there's part of the procedure for one of those is to take part of the ligament, you know, the ligament right below your kneecap and split it and pull that in and make it an ACL.
Awesome.
Yeah, great.
Awesome.
And I think what that does is that weakens your kneecap a little bit.
And that's why it breaks.
Yeah. So anyway, but if he's healthy, if he's back the way he was and he's an all-pro caliber tackle, no, he stays a tackle. And you got to find whoever it is. Now, if he's not that caliber, if he's gone from an all-pro right tackle to just a, you know, bottom 10 right tackle, then I would consider moving him to guard because he would be another Pro Bowl caliber guard.
So you think you could elevate his game by putting him at guard?
I think he would be better. I think he would be one of the top, you know, five or six guards in the country or in the NFL compared to a bottom five or six right tackles.
Okay, well, Floyd, I mean, I'm just listening to you. You're saying he can be a top five or six guard of the National Football League. Make him a guard. I mean, it's right, about having players on the field.
But he might be one of the best five or six right tackles in the league.
So you're saying you haven't given up on that.
No,
that's
what I'm saying.
So if he struggles.
If he's the right tackle we saw that first year, no, don't mess with him. Leave him alone. But if he's not, and let's
Titans
face it,
helped him a lot.
When he played, they helped him. But even last year, I mean, he just wasn't the same last year.
Well, so he got rushed back.
Yeah.
I mean,
and so, you know, is that what he is now or not? And sometimes injuries do that, and sometimes they have absolutely no effect. So I think this is kind of a wait and see, situation. And if he, you know, he's got a chance to be a a top handful at one or the other position, and I think his health will determine where that is.
Now, his agent is Drew Rosenhaus, and he's going to be a free agent after this year.
I mean, he didn't want to move.
but even if he does or he doesn't, I don't see any path for him back to Nashville, because what is Drew going to market him as? He's going to market him as a left tackle. If you need a left tackle, this
left
guy
tackle
can do
money.
For you.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's going to, you know, he's going to say this guy can do. He was an All Pro as a rookie. You know, he's had a couple injuries. You need a left tackle. Put him in there. Now maybe he can. I guess that's the only path, is that he can't get him the money that he thinks he's going to get him. But even if the Titans put him at guard or right tackle, he is going to get marketed as a left tackle. He's going to tell everybody the only reason he's not the left tackle of the Titans is because they got Luan.
Luan, right.
And so, I mean, he is going to test his market. And, I mean, Rosenhaus is going to test his market. And, you know, somebody, you know how it is.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody always overpays.
And this
always.
And this is what happens when you have a team maturing together. Because now, you know, you've got, and if it's all staggered, you know, if you had a good draft class 2 years ago and then a good draft class this year and, you know, a good draft class 6 years ago and a good, well, they're staggered enough that the contracts are staggered enough that you can kind of pick and choose and bring the guys in and say, okay, we can sign this entire draft class. When you go through 2, 3, or 4 years where you have big time draft classes, and free agency classes, but you're just bringing players in and you bring in all these good players, you can't pay them all.
Yeah.
You know, you just...
You got to choose.
Yeah. And so what free agency becomes is choosing, you know, who are the players that we want to keep? And you make that list up and say, okay, here are the top three, and, you know, let's see if we can get those done. And if you can't get those done, then you go to 4 and 5.
Having said that, picking Nate Davis in round 3, who was a guard but just played a year at right tackle, was that John Robinson kind of hedging himself, saying, I have a guard for this season and possibly a tackle for next season if that's what I've got to do?
I think there might be there, yeah. That might be part of it, because he played tackle. And
for 1 year.
Yeah, and we drafted him, I think, as the guard in mind.
Yes.
And then we've got Kelly, too, you know. So, I mean, but the versatility, and it's usually not tackle to guard, guard to tackle. You know, it's usually center to guard, guard to center, and then tackles are kind of on their own. So if you've got somebody that's athletic enough to play tackle and stout enough to play guard, then you've probably got the basis of a pretty good offensive lineman.
Well, as I've said, I expect the Titans to lose Jack Conklin after the season. They've already lost Kevin Dodd. We don't know what's going to happen with Derrick Henry.
Right.
And we don't know what's going to happen with Austin Johnson. And I break this up because those are all the four guys that they got when they traded out of that first pick.
Right.
And there's a chance that none of them are on the roster after 4 years. That would be a disaster, would it not?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's just what we're talking about. And I would imagine that J-Rob, when he's sitting in there and he's trying to figure out who it is you're going to sign, I mean, he's going to try to keep as many of those guys as he can.
Well, I mean, but you know, you said you can't pay them all.
No.
And if Derrick Henry has a big year, he's going to want to get paid.
Sure.
And then you have to make the decision, is it worth paying a running back? You know, Austin Johnson, you know, I know people want him to rush the passer more. This guy's good against the run. I hate to tell you, folks, he's a good run stopper. They're valuable in this league. Somebody will pay Austin Johnson.
And that's what he was brought in to do.
Yeah.
You know, to be a
he wasn't
run
brought
stopper.
In to sack the quarterback.
No.
That's why I say, if you want to value Daquan Jones and Austin Johnson, look at where the Titans are against the run of the league.
Exactly.
And they're in the top 10
virtually
every year. Those guys are doing why do you think the Titans, why do you think Wesley Woodyard has defied time?
Exactly.
Because he's got guys in front of him getting their jobs done. But so, you know, J-Rob's got to hold that trade together. I mean,
oh yeah, and the good part is, or the great part is, that you've got quality players there that you're going to want to keep.
Yeah,
you know, maybe all of them, and if that's the case, then you're going, wow, That was a pretty good deal.
Then that's a good deal. If you don't keep any of them, it's a terrible deal.
Yeah, so you lose them all, you're done.
So we're going to see one way or another. J-Rob's a genius, or he just totally blew it. All right, when we return here on Jared and the GM, we're going to talk about the Titans' new offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith. They've got OTAs resuming next Tuesday. A chance for a little offense against the defense, and a chance to see what Arthur Smith can do. What impact will he have? We're going to talk about that next. You're listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 1025, The Game.
Arthur's been around Marcus for what, 5 years, so I think he understands Marcus. He's seen what Marcus went through, you know, through these 5 years, you know, the ups and downs, whether it was playing, whether it was injury. So I feel like he has a good understanding to helping Marcus evaluate his game this year. So I expect big things from Marcus, and you know, I'm glad we have Arthur as our offense.
You know,
Corey Curtis and Floyd Reese solving the world's problems in between the break. Actually, we're just telling old Titans stories. Because I can't tell enough Ken Wisenhunt, Tommy Smith stories. I just can't.
They're legendary.
You know, literally, if you wanted to do a Titans sitcom, that season would have taken them to number one.
Oh.
And I'm not talking about a drama. I'm talking about a sitcom because everything about it was absolutely laughable. But I believe, I'm not sure about this. Did Ken Wisenhunt bring in Arthur Smith? I think that was his first time coming in as in the film room. What's that position called? Quality control?
Yeah, it was quality control.
Yeah, because he spent a couple years locked in a room dissecting film. You know, and you know, I have all the respect in the world for coaches who take this path to coaching. Mm-hmm. Did you ever have to do it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because I know Mike Munchak did it.
Yep.
Jim Schwartz did it,
yep.
And they all say the same thing. You will never learn more football than when you do quality control. And this guy, I think he did it for 4 years.
And it was funny because we were talking about this the other day. We brought in Greg Williams as a quality control guy, ended up being a coordinator. Brought in Schwartzy as a quality control guy, ended up being coordinator. There's one other one. But brought in a group of guys.
Munch.
There we go.
Ended up being a head coach.
Yeah, ended up being the boss. So, you know, those guys kind of learned going through the system, picking up pieces here and there and come out with a very strong opinion on the way to do things and way not to do things, which is good.
So Arthur Smith gets the nod as offensive coordinator, the Titans 17th in 3 years. Okay, that's an exaggeration, but they've had too many.
Yeah.
And you get the feeling like if things work out for Art, though, he'll be locked into this position in a while. Listen, I'm not an expert on Arthur Smith. I know Arthur Smith. I've talked with Arthur Smith. I like Arthur Smith, and I respect the job he's done because since he's been here, I feel like tight ends have arguably been among the best coached positions mm-hmm. on this team. Mm-hmm. When he gets a ringing endorsement from Delanie Walker, I respect that because I think Delanie Walker is the best Tennessee Titan of the last 5 to 10 years, and so I respect that. How much confidence do you have in Arthur Smith heading into year one as the offensive coordinator?
I think I have tremendous confidence in his ability to do just what we said. I think in his mind, he knows Corey Davis better than anybody else. He knows
Mariota.
All these different offensive players better than anybody else because he has literally seen them from the ground up. You know, he's seen them as they were brought in with a rookie. He's seen how, you know, this coach interacted with them, what was good, what was bad, how, you know, the coordinators interacted with them, what was good, what was bad, the plays that were effective for them, because it's sitting in that film room like you're talking about. I'm sure that's part of what he was doing, charting things like that. You know, well, Corey made a big play on this, a big catch on this kind of play. And so I feel really, really good about the fact that I think he will put together a scheme that will effectively, kind of enhance whatever it is they do well. The most difficult part, the hard part about all this is the actual calling plays part.
Yeah.
And if you've never, ever done that.
You're on the clock.
Yeah, it's tough.
And now, how many plays ahead do you have to be?
Oh, you've got to be three or four ahead. And
wow.
And the part that's hard is is when you're on the clock, of course, all you're caring about is, okay, you know, did we get, what did we gain? All right, we gained three. Okay. And so, you know, it's always down in distance. What's the next play? What's the best formation to run this with? Who are the best personnel to have on the field? All of those kinds of things that are running through your head, you know, and then all of a sudden you call for a certain package and they say, Jonu just broke his chin strap. He can't be in there. So now you've got to say, okay, who's the next guy in line?
Get in there.
What was the play? Oh, I forgot the play. Hold on. Let me look at the play.
Timeout. Oh, no, I'm getting yelled at by the head coach for burning the timeout.
And it becomes a madhouse down there. And if you've never experienced that, I mean, it takes a little bit of an adjustment now. It's tough.
How much have the helmet radios sped up the play calling process?
Yeah, they've helped it. And certainly have made it easier. You know, the hard part, of course, is all the because they've only got they get you know they cut off with 15 seconds left. So a lot of this, you know, you normally want to get the right people on the field. You want to get the right formation, give them the right play, and let them go. Well, sometimes you almost have to do it backwards, simply because of the 15 seconds. So you say, okay, here's the play. And now I've got that 15 seconds when the thing clicks off to get those guys on the field. Mm-hmm. And you know, now you're right down to where the quarterback's breaking the huddle with 6-7 seconds. I mean, that's tough.
Yeah.
So it's gotta be, it's really a well orchestrated thing when it runs and runs well. And if it doesn't, I mean, it gets ugly fast. I remember when I worked with Bud Grant used to say the absolute best way to get fired is to have 12 guys on the field or have 10 guys on the field. He said, I'll fire for that in a second. And, of course, I was in charge of all the special teams, too.
Yeah.
So, and you know how it is on special teams. Yeah. That's a fire drill anytime.
Guys checked out.
Oh, God, I'm scared to death all the time.
All right, Corey Curtis with Floyd Reese. I'm subbing in for Jared Stillman today on this Friday show on Jared and the GM. Okay. When I think of Arthur Smith and I think of what he's going to do, I don't know, okay? I know what's worked here since he's been here, all right? And the best Titans offense I've seen in the last, I don't know, 5-10 years was the first season under Mike Mularkey and Terry Robiskie when DeMarco Murray came in and led the AFC in rushing.
Yep.
And they did a lot of max protect, but they play-actioned the heck out of people.
Yeah.
And Delanie Walker had a huge year.
Yep.
So I expect a lot of play-action, and I expect shock plays down the field off of play-action. There was an 8-game stretch in that season. What was that, 2016? 2016, where there was an 8-game stretch where they averaged 32 points a game. People don't remember that. There was a stretch where it was among the most prolific offenses in the NFL. So they've got guys who can do it. They've just got to be in position to do it. And that's why, that's where I lean to say that's what I expect to see from Arthur Smith. But that's purely a guess. What do you expect?
I think that's probably a pretty good guess. I think that was the best year for Marcus.
Yeah.
That was the best year for the running game. It was the best year for
protection.
The offensive line.
Yeah.
It was across the board. And once again, I mean, Arthur was here for all of that. I think Arthur, and this is just me, the little bit I know about him, I think he's going to be a little bit more hard-nosed. I think he's going to be a little bit more effective with the run game. I think he's going to be a little bit more sure that Marcus is protected long enough to get the ball off so we don't experience 11 sacks. I mean, I think he's going to be a little bit more sure. Now, does that mean that you're not going to have the L.A. Rams kind of wide open offense? And maybe it does. But if you're effective and if you're winning games and if you're doing all that, you know, I'm okay with all that.
Well,
I'm fine with that.
And you know what? Great players make great coaches.
Oh, yeah.
And Corey Davis had a step up year last year. If he grows even just a little bit from last year, he's going to be close to a 1,000-yard season. And he's, you know, he is a guy that you trust to go get the football. And I don't know how many times, like when it's Taywan Taylor, I don't know if he's ever in the right spot. That's just my feeling. I could be way off base on that, but that's the feeling I get when I watch him. I don't know about Corey. I think Corey's largely locked in. But when you lost Delanie Walker last year, a guy who caught 74 passes in 2017, Titans tight ends caught 67 combined last year after that guy left. So not having a guy who you could fully trust had a huge impact on Mariota, and I think Adam Humphries is going to be a precise guy who he can trust. And these targets, I think, are going to make Marcus better and are, through that, going to make Arthur Smith look like a genius.
And I was looking at the numbers about last year, and last year Marcus completed, I mean, I'm talking about, what would it be, 17, completed 300 passes. And of those 300, over 200 of them went to Delanie. Went to Rishard Matthews.
DeMarco.
There you go.
Yeah.
And DeMarco Murray.
And you know what? Those guys were all big-time NFL players.
And they're all gone.
Yep.
And so now you're left with 100 receptions between, you know, a gaggle of guys.
Yeah, it's funny, Floyd, because I told everybody last year that Taywan Taylor and Tajay Sharpe were not good enough. Not to be the twos and threes. They're not good enough. And people go, oh, just give them. You know who else thinks they're not good enough? John Robinson, because he brought in Adam Humphries and A.J. Brown because they weren't good enough. And that's the way this league is. So.
And this, I mean, this is going to create competition. And if, in fact, some of those down-the-line guys have a chance, have something that they haven't done, then they're going to have a chance to show that. And if they don't, then guess what? They won't be playing much.
Well, the Titans are going to have to score points to win the AFC South, and they're going to have to try to find a way to slow down Deshaun Watson and Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
And that's something we've been talking about for a while. Do they have the right pieces to contend defensively in the AFC South? That's next. This is Corey Curtis sitting down with Floyd Reese, sitting in for Jared Stillman. You're listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You had a really good defense last year. Do you feel like with the new additions that this defense in 2019 could maybe be great to special?
Well, you hope so. I mean, that's what we're all striving for. It's what you hope for. You know, there's always the intangibles that you never know with the injuries and things like that that happen. But, you know, I think that we got the makings of improving from last year, doing the same system. I thought the guys did a great job of adapting to a new system last year for the first time around. So hopefully there will be some familiarity with that. And coaching staff hasn't changed at all on defense. That's always a great thing with continuity. So we're very optimistic.
Titans defensive coordinator Dean Pease back for year two. Corey Curtis with Floyd Reese. I'm sitting in for Jared Stillman on Jared of the GM. And Floyd, having Dean Pease come back, having that continuity, you've got all five guys in the secondary back. You basically got all the guys up front back. You got basically all your linebackers. You did have, I take it back, you did have Brian Arakpo and Derek Morgan. You know, they're gone. Arakpo has retired. No one's picked up Derek Morgan yet. You know, you knew the end was coming for those guys, but largely, what, 80, 90% of your defense is there with Dean Pease. How important is that for this team coming into this season?
Oh, it's going to be immense. And I think, I mean, I would agree with you. I mean, Dean Pease may be the most important piece to that puzzle because for whatever reason, and Dean has been able to do this. He was able to do it at New England when I was with him. He was able to do it at Baltimore, and now he's able to do it here. He's got a touch with these players, and he can just get them to do the right things because what he does is not simple. It's not elementary football. No. It's big-time football.
I had Bernard Pollard tell me it would take a couple of months for these guys to get comfortable with the nuance of what he wanted them to do.
And for you to be all that you need to be, you've got to get down to that nuance. And Dean has the ability to get all of that across. And once they do that, they've got a chance to be good. I think we saw it last year without much of a pass rush. I think the pass rush will be improved this year.
Why do you think that?
I think Landry is going to mature.
Okay.
And I think that with Landry, you're going to have a group effort between Wake and a bunch of these outside guys that are going to be, as a group, you know, probably not one guy may end up in double sacks with double sacks if it's not Landry. But as a group, you know, as four or five guys, they may end up with, you know, 20 or 30 sacks or something, and that'll make a world of difference for you.
Well, you know, last year you had Brian Arakpo and Derek Morgan, still solid pros who could set the edge,
yeah.
But they were just at a point where they were half a step away from getting to the quarterback, and you could see it. I mean, Arakpo just couldn't move like he was, and he knew it. I mean, he knew it was time to hang it up. The Titans still last year, eighth in the league, 333 yards a game defensively, third in scoring defense at 18.9 points per game. But the thing that, you know, we talk about sacks, players know we like to talk about sacks, and the reason we like to talk about sacks is I feel like today's NFL, though, is still won and lost on game-changing plays.
Sure.
Sacks and drives, interceptions and fumbles get you the football, and I think those are the two things. To get to that elite level, to beat Andrew Luck and Deshaun Watson, those numbers have got to go up for this team.
And we've got, in my opinion, we've got some Pro Bowl caliber, All-Pro caliber DBs. You know, we've got a group back there, two or three or four guys that potentially are very, very good players. If they can get some kind of rush, some kind of pressure, then I think those guys really skyrocket.
Yeah, I mean, how excited would you be with Jeffrey Simmons to start this season?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you'd be thrilled to death. And again, I think the combination of Casey and Simmons and what they're going to do to help the outside guys, you know, because now you've got to be, you know, you got to be pretty sure that you block those inside guys. If you don't, they'll be standing in front of the quarterback every snap. So you do all of that, and then all of a sudden it's a little bit easier to get around the edge. But I think that all of those guys and what they can do as far as a pass rush will tremendously help what Dean is able to do coverage-wise.
You haven't brought up one name, and that's Rashawn Evans. And I think that Rashawn Evans is kind of like, you know, like when you play poker and you decide whether or not to use the wild card.
Yeah.
I think he's his wild card. I think he can use him inside or outside. He's got Wesley Woodyard and Jayon Brown that he can play inside. If he wants to put Evans on the outside to rush the passer, I think he could do that. I think he's going to do that. I think he's going to deploy Rashawn Evans in a way to free him up to get sacks. I will be very surprised if he doesn't have at least five sacks this year.
I would agree with you, and I think it'll be maybe not necessarily on a third and seven situation, but if it were to get third and 14 or third, obvious pass.
You don't really have to cut him loose.
Yeah, then you just get out there and say, sick him, you know. Go. If they run the ball, we're going to tackle them before they can get 15 yards. So you go get it. And I can see that happening. And I think, you know, I think we saw Logan Ryan last year blitz effectively, get whatever he got,
Jayon
four or
Brown
five sacks.
Six sacks.
Jayon Brown was outstanding.
Yeah, he's got speed.
So, yeah,
greasy
he can
speed.
Run. So, I mean, all of those guys, in addition, you know, maybe you take a team that was – you know, very, very low on the sack total, and all of a sudden the sacks start jumping a little bit. You're getting more pressure. Helps everybody across the board. And you don't, because we had a lot of plays against us. I mean, for us to have the number eight defense in the league.
Number three scoring.
And number three scoring shows you how good that group is, because there were a lot of snaps.
You know what else can help you with sacks? Having the lead.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so if the Titans can score some points,
amen,
make teams throw the football, more of those sacks are going to come. I mean, we always talk about complementary football. That's just one thing upon the other. But the important question here is, do they have the defensive pieces? You like what they're becoming.
Yes.
They've never beaten Andrew Luck.
I know it.
Do they have enough to beat number 12 in the neckbeard?
Enter the pass rush.
Yeah. It's going to have to.
That's it.
But last year, they went to Indianapolis, and they couldn't even tell you what kind of deodorant that guy was wearing.
No, and we have not been able to put pressure on Luck for years. And
now, he would disagree with that, because he had a shoulder injury and I think a lacerated liver or kidney courtesy of the Tennessee Titans. But you know, those were all Jarrell Casey. And it needs to be more than Jarrell Casey.
And there we go. And and enter rookie. You know. So I mean, I think all of those guys will make a world of it. And let's face it, in this division this year, I mean, quarterbacks are taking a giant step forward. And the only, you know, the number one issue that'll slow them down is the pass rush. So if you can knock them down a few times, it makes a world of difference.
All right, in the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking a little NBA, talk about the Warriors who won again last night. And then we're going to merge two topics, the NBA draft and the NFL draft, for a very interesting concept that I'm sure will spark some healthy debate. This is Corey Curtis sitting in for Jared Stillman on Jared and the GM. You're listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.